Hey there, it's Tamara Kassane with Artist Soapbox, sending big congratulations to Lauren and the rest of the Beltline to Broadway team for 100 episodes.
Thank you, Tamara Kassane from Artist Soapbox, and welcome to our 100th podcast episode. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, we're taking a trip down memory lane and remembering some of our listeners' favorite moments, along with a couple of mine. You know, when I launched Beltline to Broadway, formerly RDU on Stage, in 2019, I was not sure how we were going to get through that first podcast episode, much less 100 episodes. But people were so supportive and encouraged me before we launched, and I couldn't be more grateful for that. Once we did launch, I feel like it took me a hot minute to find my voice and figure out exactly how I wanted to use this platform. I knew I wanted to talk about theater, but honestly, I kind of wanted to talk about life and why theater matters to me. So, rather serendipitous for me, on my very first episode, I interviewed Jerome Davis, who is the artistic director of Burning Coal Theater here in Raleigh. One of the things I love about Burning Coal Theater is that tackling social justice issues is rooted in their DNA. He understands how live performance can impact how we think about the world and each other.
Lauren, I always think about this. It may seem like a trivial digression, but when I was in high school, my twin brother, Tony, who's a high school drama teacher, but when we were in high school, he wrote a play that he wanted to produce, and the school agreed that he could do it during the big lunch period. We had like a 90-minute lunch period, and we produced the play, and the play had a single swear word in it, and it was hell. It was the word hell, and it was used to reference a place in religious lore. And after the first performance, the vice principal came and said, you can't do that. We're going to shut this down. You can't do the remaining two performances unless you cut out that one word. And my brother refused to cut it out. But maybe a month later, there was a fundraiser event to raise money for the marching band or something like that. And if you donated, you were able to spend one of your class periods watching a movie in the very same auditorium that this play had been done. And the movie was a disaster film called The Towering Inferno with Steve McQueen and Paul Newman. And, you know, it's a decent, as those movies go, it's a decent movie, but there's every swear word in the book in it. And there are like burning bodies and people plunging to their death and babies crying, you know. And I looked at that and I thought about this one word and I thought, well, why did this, you know, completely innocent live play have so much more impact than that film that was produced with a multi-million-dollar budget, much more realistic seeming, you know, and all that? I've been thinking about that since, you know, 40 odd years since then. And the only conclusion I can come to is that there is an impact on an audience for a live event that can't be matched through digital or film or, you know, any other medium. And so while it may seem that that the audiences for theater are smaller, first of all, that's not true. In the state of North Carolina, in the last year when it was measured, more people attended theater than attended football, right? The problem is that all the people who go to football go to one place, right? And so there's thousands and thousands of them, and the advertisers can put their name on the billboard and make money off of that, as opposed to the theater where it's divided up into many little areas, performance areas, churches and schools and basements and little theaters like Burning Coal and bigger theaters like Playmakers. And so it seems that the impact on culture is not as extreme as, for instance, in a film or a television show or something like, or a sporting event even. But I don't believe that's the case. I believe that theater has a much greater impact because it is live, because it is immediate, and because when people watch an event in the privacy of their home or the relative privacy of a movie theater or something like that, and I'm quoting the British playwright David Edgar now, they do so at their most reactionary, right? When you come out into public and join the public sector, sit in a room with other people like you or not like you, you are at your most vulnerable and the most likely to react in a positive way that rather than a selfish way to ideas that are being presented to you. So yeah, I think the theater is a tool for change, and I think it's why it's been around these 3,000 plus years and will be for another 3,000.
So pretty early on, talking about the why behind the stories we see on stage and who's telling those stories, that became the motivation for what I wanted for this podcast. I didn't want each episode to be an advertisement or infomercial for a certain production. I wanted it to be a thought-provoking conversation, similar to the conversations I was having with other audience members and artists in the lobby or the parking lot after I had seen a play or musical. And it turns out, as we've all learned this past year, that collective experience that actually makes our hearts beat at the same time, that is what distinguishes live theater from virtual productions or film, as my friend and mentor Roy Dix, a longtime theater critic, explained so eloquently when I interviewed him.
The minute you get into a gigantic production of, Spider-Man on Broadway, King Kong on Broadway, it's almost a self-defeating thing because they're trying to recreate something that a different medium is always going to do better. No matter how fantastic, my God, they've got King Kong walking on the stage, but it's still a sort of trick. It's still sort of trying to dazzle you with something, and that's where all the energies are going. And again, nothing wrong with it. If that's entertaining and that's how you want to spend your discretionary dollars, that is not a problem. It's just that that becomes, in many people's minds, the only thing that theater is, and they don't think about or particularly want to see this other larger category. But to me, why theater needs to exist and should exist is when you could walk into the room of 90 people sitting in a black box theater and three people are on a bare stage with a couple of chairs, and you can be blown away because there's the intimacy, there's the whatever the subject matter is, and there's that live quality of your being in direct, more intimate connection to the person.
Now, I want to shout out to longtime listener Catherine Kelly, who shared with me that that episode with Roy Dix was one of her favorites. Mine too, Catherine. Catherine wrote me back in August 2019 via the website to tell me that she's a mom, like me, who has two young children who she has been taking to shows since they were a year old. She says that both her children immensely enjoy the theater and have been bitten by the bug hard, which is why she enjoyed my conversation on Theater for Young Audiences with Noah Putterman. Here is a clip of that episode.
What I think the greatest challenge is for theater, for young audience practitioners, is the fact that it is being used to make money. It's being used by a lot of organizations as the money-making part of it. And in order to make money, it has to appeal to a vast audience, and that makes it commercial. And if the whole reason that an organization is doing children's theater, whether it's pay to play, you know, having kids pay to be in a show and perform the show for their parents and friends and family, and you get dragged into it because you're friends with the parents whose kids are in it, and you're like, God, I hate children's theater. Or if it's a portion of a organization's programming that they know they need to foot the bill for other things because parents are looking for different forms of entertainment and ways to occupy their time. Oh, that's another problem, is that why are parents bringing their kids to the theater? And sometimes it's just to have an hour of not having to worry about them. They can just sit them down in the seat and a lot of times take a nap, to be honest. I the number of times I've been in a play or a musical for young audience and the parents are just asleep while the kids are enthralled And they're missing this beautiful moment to see the magic happening for their child because they're so exhausted. I don't want to judge them. You know, who knows what's going on in their lives that they need that nap at that time. But it's so sad that, like, this could be a family moment and instead it's just a nap for the parent and the kid is left to their own devices.
For me, I remember more when the light bulb went off for my daughter. Mm. We were seeing Matilda. Mm. She loved Matilda. She loved the story. She loved this idea that there's a kid who's overcoming kind of great obstacles, kind of like my daughter was going through. And afterwards, we were able to have such a great conversation about it. Yeah. It sparked dialogue.
Definitely. So much of the complaining about kids, is, you know, their inability to communicate today, I think has to start with adults as well. Adults are having a lot of trouble communicating today, clearly. We don't know sometimes how to begin those conversations. And I think that's up to us in some ways, because we can't say it has to always be the kids who are going to open up to us. How do we make them feel safe to open up to us?
Maybe sitting in the theater is a safe space to do
it. It ought to be. It ought to be. But in order for it to be a safe place, there can't be judgment. And, you know, you mentioned a show like Matilda. Again, that's good theater in many ways. Now, you know, some people may disagree and say that's not, I don't like that show, etc. And that's fine. But they didn't go into that saying, we're going to make a show that kids will like. They said, we're going to make a show that people will like. This is going to sound silly, but it really does go back to that idea that Robin Williams presents in Mrs. Doubtfire, the line about don't patronize kids. If you like it, they'll like it. And it's really that simple. I think that might be the thing that theater for young audience practitioners miss sometimes. They're so focused on, will kids get this? Will kids understand this? Just treat it the way you would treat any work. Will the audience appreciate what's happening on stage? They don't have to like it, but will they be engaged?
So you heard in that clip, I mentioned my daughter, Zara, who lives with autism. Now, Zara loves going to shows with me. She's written some reviews, and she even conducted an interview on this podcast with a young actor, Michael Larson, who also lives with autism. Larson played the role of Christopher Boone in the Raleigh Little Theater production of A Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, and it turns out that he and my daughter had a lot to talk about.
As a person who has autism, what do you want people to know or understand about autism?
I want people to understand that people with autism are capable of everything that a person without autism is capable of. All it is, we're not crazy. It's not like we can't think properly. We can't do anything that other people can do. No, like we're perfectly capable human beings. We're perfectly capable Homo sapiens. But we just, all it is our mind thinks differently than other people. So I hope that people can understand that being a person with autism is not a bad thing. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's something that you should be proud of because it's a very cool thing to be able to see the world in a different way while still understanding how other people see it. It's really a very enlightening experience going through like all of the struggles that someone with autism would go through. But like you can overcome it if you just work at it. And once you overcome it, you're just left with a very unique, beautiful mind.
We've spoken a lot about equity, diversity, and inclusion. Shortly after students at the University of North Carolina of Chapel Hill tore down a Confederate statue on campus, I interviewed the creatives behind the Playmakers production of Howard Kraft's No Fear and Blues Long Gone, Nina Simone, which starred Yolanda Rabin. The production was directed by Katherine Hunter Williams, who spoke to me about the role theater has in healing a community. We are sitting at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill's kind of a city in turmoil right now. The last 6 months have been rough for this community. Students tore down the Silent Sam statue. Oh, yeah. Beloved basketball coach resigned over racial insensitivities. Right. How does a play or the theater, how does that help heal, strengthen, engage a community like this one?
I hear this a lot about, you know, is it healing? Does it strengthen? Does it fix? I want it to make people invest and to make them move to action and to be inspired. The healing of the community is going to take a lot. Continual investment. And we like a little really quick fix nowadays. Oh, if I just do this. Oh, if I just go take this class. Oh, if I read this book, right? And I don't want to let our audiences off the hook as thinking that it will be as simple as a snap of the fingers. This is a long time coming, and it's going to take a long time to get it right.
Another person who feels very passionate about representation on stage is North Carolina Theater's producing artistic director, Eric Woodall, who has the distinction of being our most frequent guest. Eric has been on the podcast 4 times. On episode 16, his second appearance on the show, he spoke to me about this very thing.
Broadway is trying to change. Broadway is trying to expand. Theater in general, especially around the country and community, professional theater regionally, is trying to make changes. Is it happening quickly enough? No. Everybody says they want to do this. Everybody says they want diversity and they want change, but it comes down to doing it. And I've heard so many conversations about why we can't. And one that I have so little patience for is it will look like if we have a token, it will look like it's just a token or we're exploiting. And I get that. So then have more. Right. Fix it. Right. You know, then have more and really, really just do it.
The last time Eric was on this podcast, he was talking about the high cost of the pandemic. It's interesting because when COVID shuttered theaters, I had a lot of episodes in the queue waiting to be released and some unedited interviews as well. One of those interviews was with Emmy Award winner Antoine L. Smith, who was supposed to star in the North Carolina Theater production of Memphis. Here's a clip of that interview.
I think theater allows people to face their fears that they probably can't face in their real lives. So, you know, people come to the theater, they see stuff played out on stage, you know, and they go home. I feel a lot of people, a lot of shows that I've done personally, I know people leave far differently than when they came in to see the show. Like a lot of shows that I've done have been spiritually and mentally changing to myself. So I know that people that have sat out in the audience have been changed. Like you can see physical changes in people's faces at the curtain call when the lights come up, and you just know that you made a difference in somebody's lives. And theater plays a huge part in that. It allows people to just be for those 2.5 hours and accept what they want or not accept what they want. But that's theater. Or think, right.
But my conversation with Antoine L. Smith never aired because Memphis was canceled. And I, like everyone else, couldn't ignore the potential catastrophic impact that COVID might have on our performing arts community. So on March 27th, 2020, I released the first of 3 episodes exploring the economic and emotional toll COVID was taking on our performing artists. It turns out that these episodes brought some of you some great solace. Beltline to Broadway top fan Susan Jordan White said that even though theaters were dark, that our podcast and live chats were a bright spot in our community. Tamara Kassane wrote us to say, I really appreciated the episodes when theaters first shut down due to COVID. You featured a number of guests over two different episodes, and I found those to be of great comfort. It's interesting, Tamara, because I found talking to those artists in the early days of the pandemic for these episodes to be quite comforting to me as well. One of the people I spoke to then was Heather Strickland, executive director of Raleigh Little Theater, who shared with me her concerns post-COVID.
I think all of us are going to have a lot to deal with when we get on the other side of this. And, you know, it goes beyond the very financial impact that, you know, specifically our theater community is going to feel, but many other industries and individuals are going to feel. But there's going to be an emotional fallout. And, you know, we can rally right now. I have every confidence that particularly our arts community is incredibly resilient, and we will get through this, and then we will get through the picking up the pieces that are, is going to come after this. But there's also a much longer term impact. And so often we get through the sort of picking up the pieces and putting things back together phase, and then we think, oh, we're done. We made it. Better times are here. And then that's when the emotional really hits us, because we can breathe a little bit. And then that is when kind of all of that trauma really loads back on us. And it's so far removed from the initial trauma that we forget. We don't necessarily have the context of that this is still fallout from this thing that we went through. So sometimes it's even harder to process because we're not aligning it with everything that we just went through to just get on the other side of things that seem terrible.
The podcast episode that has been downloaded and listened to by far the most is also one of my personal favorite interviews. It is a conversation with David Wood, artistic and executive director of Theater in the Park here in Raleigh, and his son Ira. During that episode, David spoke to me about his life in the theater and gave this piece of advice to aspiring actors.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? As to understand that question is to get a handle on theater. It doesn't mean, where are you? It means, why are you? Wherefore art thou Romeo? Why are you Romeo? Why are you an actor? Why do you have this passion for getting on the stage? Because it's a tough career. You have to be so, so acclimated to rejection and failure sometimes, because that's what we do. We have to be willing to fail. We have to go out and try things. But I think the best advice I could give anybody, and I've said this for years, if you want to be an actor, don't. If you have to be an actor, God bless you.
I have loved every moment of producing these 100 episodes for all of you. Please continue sharing with me all of your kind messages and favorite podcast memories and episodes, and I'll be sure to share those on social media throughout the week. Thanks for listening. And of course, if you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast. Visit us online at www.beltlinetobroadway.org or follow us on social media on Instagram or Facebook at Beltline to Broadway or Twitter at Beltline to B-Way. Until next time, I hope to see you at the theater very soon.
Hi, Lauren and Beltline to Broadway. This is Janessa Baldina. And for me and the Interact Board, congratulations on your 100th podcast. Thank you for everything that you have done for the theater community this past year, especially. We appreciate how you've brought us all together and kept us close.
Hi, Lauren. Erin Sullivan here, wanting to wish you happy 100th episode. Thank you for everything you do for the theater community in this area, in the state, and from artists. You know, you've been so supportive, and it's people like you who are starting the conversations, keeping the conversations going, and just supporting us through all of the ups and downs, highs and lows. You are a true treasure to our theatrical community, and thank you for all you do. Happy 100th episode.
Congratulations on your 100th episode, Beltline to Broadway. You're such a wonderful resource for the theater community.
Even though our theaters were dark this year, you were definitely a shining light for our community. Thank you so much for all that you do. And here's to another 100 episodes.
Congratulations, Beltline to Broadway, on your 100th podcast. I'm so happy to have been a small part of your amazing journey, and I'm grateful for everything that you have given to our community. Congratulations, and break a leg going forward.
Congratulations on this impressive milestone, and thank you so much for all that you do for our community. Here's to 100 more, and 100 after that, and so on, and so on.